The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. This week, my guest is Megan Pitcher, CEO of Baritone Health, a Houston health tech company that has created an at-home diagnostic tool for sleep apnea to help patients best find a treatment plan for better sleep. Megan joins the show today to share Baritone's origin story from the TMC Biodesign Program, as well as to discuss her big plans for the company in the new year, from FDA clearance to raising a seed round. Hi, Megan. Happy almost new year. Welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for inviting me. I'm really excited to talk to you, talk to Innovation Map and talk more about Baritone. Appreciate it.
Yeah, well, you were one of our finalists for the Houston Innovation Awards, and reading your application really piqued my interest. So I'm glad to dive into your story a little bit more in depth. So just before we start and we talk about Baritone Health and everything you're doing with your company, can you give us a bit on your background and what brought you into the world of health tech innovation?
Yeah, of course. So I'm originally from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, but I ended up going to college out at Texas A&M University, and I just really never left Texas. I wanted to study genetics. As a kid, I always had an interest in biology, life sciences, animals, things like that. One of my high school teachers said, if you want to have a career this in the future, genetics is going to be the future. This is where you need to go. This was way back in 2001, so 3 years ago. It's like a genetics program. That's what I want to study in my undergrad degree, so that's what I did. After I finished at Texas A&M University, I actually worked in biotech for a couple of years. I worked at Lexicon Pharmaceuticals. If you know that company, they're out in the Woodlands. They're actually a spin-out from Baylor College of Medicine. Started as a startup out of Baylor, grew to one of the largest IPOs in biotech history, and still running operations out of the Woodlands, Texas. Worked there for about 4 or 5 years. They were going through a transition where they were moving from kind of target discovery into clinical development. And I kind of could see the writing on the wall that I might need to take a break from that. So I actually went and pursued my PhD at Baylor College of Medicine. So spent 5 years working at Lexicon and then went to go to Baylor College of Medicine for my PhD in 2010. I studied a program called Translational Biology and Molecular Medicine because I always had this interest, again, in kind of translating like the wet bench science part of it to something that's relevant to human disease. So the program they had at Baylor at the time, you'd be working in your laboratory with the PI, and you also spend some time shadowing clinicians in clinic, meeting with patients and their families and understanding how this work that you're doing in a mouse model actually affects the human condition. During my time at Baylor, I picked up this other interest in intellectual property. So Baylor had a technology transfer office, as many academic institutions do. What they do is they connect technology that's being developed in the laboratories to big companies that want to out-license it and develop these programs in-house. That's one of the, I guess, the secrets, if you will, of how innovation is made. A lot of it comes out of the academy, funded by federal research, is out-licensed to a company like a Merck or a Stryker, whoever, who develops the product. So these tech transfer offices at academic institutions are kind of that facilitator of that transfer. I was doing an internship there, and it was really reading patents and understanding if the new intellectual property that was coming out of Baylor could be something that's suitable for transfer out into a company. So once I started doing that, I thought, this is great. I want to do tech transfer as a career and not go back to biotech. So when I finished at Baylor in 2015, I started, did a short postdoc at UT, and came back to Baylor to work in the transfer office as a full-time employee. Did that work for about 5 years, and that's kind of where I picked up the entrepreneurship bug. Because in this position, you're talking to academicians, which is something I had a lot of experience with. You're talking to companies, which is something I had a little bit of experience with from working at Lexicon, but a lot more experience kind of learning the diversity of what kind of med tech and biotech companies there are. You know, there's companies that operate in diagnostics only, or device only, or pharmaceuticals only. They have all these different needs and desires and kind of ways they look at the world. And then the third party you talk with is legal side. So converting the scientific idea to something that is embodied in a patent application. Now, I never wrote a patent application. I was more of like, this is what we have. We think this is really cool, and we think there's a good space for this. Can you help us build the patent application around this? And then once the patent application is ready, hey, company X, this looks really cool in my picture portfolio. Do you think this is something you'd be interested in? Doing the negotiation between the institution and the company. So I just thought that was the coolest thing in the world. It kind of hit. There's always something interesting to work on. Be it kind of the new stuff coming out of the labs or learning about what companies were doing with Baylor's technology. I just thought it was the coolest thing ever. And I was just happy to do this career for the rest of my life. And then the pandemic hit. So the pandemic kind of had me rethinking what kind of risk I should be taking with my career. I especially remember the early days of the pandemic, where it was, you know, we don't know what causes it, we don't know how people are catching it, but it's very bad and very contagious. And I thought, man, if I could just go out to HEB and catch COVID and be really, really sick, why shouldn't I be taking some other risk of around the same time, I happened to get an email from Jason Sakamoto, who's over at Texas Medical Center Biodesign. He said, hey, we have this fellowship program. Have you ever thought about being an entrepreneur? And kind of my gut reaction was like, oh no, never. I would never take this risky shot of kind of quitting this job that's really stable and really satisfying to me, to be running a company and have these moments where maybe you don't take salary, or maybe you don't know if the technology is going to work, or maybe you don't know what your next 5 years will look like. But once the idea kind of rooted in my head, and I thought about the entrepreneurs I had talked to, you know, working in Lexicon, working in the tech transfer office, and seeing PIs develop their own companies, I thought, huh, I probably have the skill sets and I do have an interest. And this is a good way for me to kind of have a chance at it. I know you mentioned that you have lots of Biodesign alumni that you've talked to as part of your work in Innovation Map. So just briefly, the Biodesign program is a year-long fellowship targeted at scientists, physicians that are interested in entrepreneurship. They give you a year. They'll support your salary. They'll support some prototyping costs, and you get to just kind of play around with a team that you meet and form, and see if you can put something together that's really cool. At the end of the year, if you like what you're working on, you're able to launch the company out of there. And if not, you just kind of, you know, it was a cool experience, and you go on to your next career step. So for my team, I did the Biodesign program, and from 2021 to 2022, met my two co-founders who are really great, Dr. Britt Cross, who's our chief medical officer at Baritone, and Dr. Omer Hilich, who's our chief technical officer. We hit it off. We started working on this technology to solve a problem in obstructive sleep apnea. We were able to build a very early working prototype during the year fellowship, and we were getting some really good, just early traction from customer feedback, talking to doctors about the need, talking to some folks that invest specifically in sleep medicine. They thought, hey, this is really cool. This is really a big need, and we decided to launch the company. Kind of launched immediately into like this worst nightmare thing where it's really hard to raise funding, and like there's these periods where you're not taking salary and stuff. But it's been a fun journey so far. So we've been working on Baritone since 2021, officially founded the company in 2022. And you know, we were, as you said, nominated for Best Biotech Company, which is huge because there's so many great nominees this year. So we're really really excited to be considered among these really great companies that are operating in Houston.
Thanks so much for your background. It's always so interesting to me to hear from health tech innovators because you guys have such diverse backgrounds. It's such an interesting field. And I feel like yours is a great example of really testing the waters in a couple different lakes and finding the best of combining all of your interests and talents. And you're right, you are not the first person from the TMC Biodesign program to join me on the podcast. Such a fascinating program. I always love to talk about that too. So let's talk about Baritone and specifically how your technology works. I know, you know, obviously part of the Biodesign program is looking for the clinical needs and the patient needs and finding that solution. So what was the kind of aha moment, and then how did you build out that technology to solve it?
Sure. So The biodesign program is following this curriculum set by the group at Stanford. So the first step is needs finding. The program they run at Stanford, they focus on, I think, a different set of needs, or, you know, it might be like ENT 1 year or orthopedics the next year or something like that, and kind of focusing on that. The program that they're running at Texas Medical Center, you have everything, anything that you might be interested in as you're, you know, an individual coming in and joining a team. Anything that might have been like your graduate school research project or something, it could be that. We have physicians that come in and they've already, you know, been studying this field of medicine for a while, and then they're going to, you know, expand and start a company in that field. So for us, we just did needs finding. We had a couple areas that we were interested in. We were looking at women's health. We were looking at orthopedics. We were looking at dentistry, and something that we kept coming back to, especially for orthopedics and dentistry, was this idea of bone metal interfaces. So we're thinking we would do something about that. Our technical officer owner has a really great expertise in acoustics and signaling. So we thought, well, maybe we could do something to kind of make this bone metal interface work a little better. So I'm kind of exploring that. We found a lot of devices in sleep apnea, and we were like, man, what is this? There are these devices that pull the tongue forward by anchoring it to a bone in the face to prevent the apnea events. We're like, wow, what's going on there? So then we started diving more into the sleep apnea treatment side. We saw all these companies trying to solve the problem of, we need to make the airway collapse less. We need to make the airway wider in some way. So it might be a surgical approach that reduces tissue mass. It might be, as I mentioned, this approach where you pull tissue off of the airway and anchor it somewhere else so that it's not causing collapses in the airway. People working on medications, nerve stimulation, so stimulating nerves in the body. So again, pull that tongue muscle forward. And so we thought, man, there's all these approaches in sleep apnea. This seems to be a really growing field. This is really interesting. Let's do a deeper dive here. So we kind of plotted out where are the issues in care, where are patients kind of circling in these hubs of diagnosis before they go into treatment. And one of the things that we found is that it's really to match a patient with sleep apnea with a good treatment for them. And one of the reasons is it's hard to get an understanding of where the individual's site of collapse is as sleep medicine is currently practiced. So again, going back to our team, we have our CTO has this great expertise on acoustic sensing. He's like, I think I can solve that problem. Let me tinker around a little bit. So within the week, we had kind of our basic prototype, just identifying where a sound site happens in the airway. So this is a very simple version of what the device does. Right now, we have a device that is embodied in this little wearable patch. You stick it on your cheek. What it does is it uses passive sonar sensing to identify when a patient has an apnea, identifies where the collapse happens in the airway, identifies what configuration that collapse is happening in a three-dimensional space. So kind of going from here is the need, let's plot it out in a map and see actually where are the pain points, where are the connecting points, where are the gaps that we can fill that people haven't been working in and haven't been really busy in before, and how can we solve the problem using the skills on our team. So that was kind of our biodesign process. And it's this is interesting because when I think about kind of when people describe their company journeys or describe their, like when they're doing their thesis dissertation or whatever, they tell the story as like A, B, C, D, E, all the way to Z. It's a straight line. But there was all this other stuff we were looking at. And there was all this other, these other things we were thinking about before we got to where we are now. But now looking back, we're like, well, and that led to that, and that led to the other thing. So it's an interesting way to kind of view the journey.
I always love asking this question of founders, but where did the name come from? Was that also part of the ABCD journey?
Oh, our co-founder team, our team of three, we were looking at a dental company, and they had this whole ad campaign around lions. So they had this website with all these majestic lions. I don't know, like one of the CEOs or one of the owners went on to safari or something like that, or is really into photography. They had all these lions all over the page. I'm like, oh man, that's really interesting, really intriguing. And then we kind of started brainstorming around bears, and you know, bears are cool. They're associated with sleep. You know, they associated with snoring at the same time associated with, you know, very sound and happy and gentle sleep, like with the teddy bear and that kind of thing. We started thinking about, the problem we're trying to solve, especially for sleep apnea. You think about muscle tone. So decreased muscle tone can lead to increased chance of apneas. It's an airflow restrictions. We spell baritone with BAIR. We have AI in the technology. So one of my co-founders popped in one day. He's like, "I got it. It's baritone." And so I'm like, I was like, okay, maybe. But we really like the name. It stuck. Our CCO drew up the logo, and if you look at our logo, we have these little bear ears that cover the top. So you have these two little eyes and these two little ears. We have this prototype software of the technology where he's animated like one of the little eyes on the eye winking at you while it's doing the diagnostic read. So anyway, it's kind of a long story, but we like bears. We like the idea of bears. We have a little teddy bear with the one of our baritone shirts with the logo on it that we'll put on a table if we have a tabling event. So it's we like it.
Love it. Yeah, it's fun and it's kind of cool to have like a mascot when you can. So I know we've talked about obviously the biodesign program, but you're currently in another program that is in Houston Activate. So I've covered Activate on Innovation Map. I know some people are familiar, but will you tell us a little bit about the program and your experience so far?
So Activate is this really awesome program. It's a nonprofit corporation. What they focus on is helping scientists, entrepreneurs, see out their vision for building a company. So one of the things about scientists, and this is a hard learned lesson from the years I worked in tech transfer, we are trained to speak about science in a way that is sometimes, absolutely against kind of like the way you would need to pitch a business. So when you're talking about, like a recent discovery, I'm going to say this is the discovery, but here are all the caveats. We didn't test enough of this, and maybe we could do another statistical test, and maybe we should look into this, that, and the other thing. But you can't really pitch your science product in that way. You can't go to an investor and say, "Well, here's what we have, but here are 10 ways that it can go wrong, and three ways that we didn't do the, we could have done the experiment better." You have to say, "This is the thing. It's the greatest. We're gonna make a lot of money and change a lot of lives with it." So just something as basic as that is kind of the communication of how you pitch what you're working on. There's also just kind of developing a company in a professional way. Like a lot of companies in Activate need help with incorporation or finding space. A lot of folks are fresh off of postdocs or graduate school. And they need to move their scientific body of work out of an academic lab into a lab space that they're leasing, and finding the equipment that they need, thinking about product market fit, thinking about how they're going to make money and margins on the product. And so Baritone is an example of a life science company in Activate, but the vast majority of the companies to date have been in climate, carbon capture, clean water, energy, that kind of thing. So some of these companies, they're not pitching, like a Band-Aid sized medical device. They need to build a huge factory to build the thing that they're building. So going from like a postdoc scientist position or a scientist position to CEO of a company where you're, thinking about leasing a warehouse and buying equipment and, covering, hiring employees and stuff. There are huge leaps between step A and step B. So Activate as a program has a really great curriculum. The first kind of course, if you will, that you take, it's called Elements of Entrepreneurship, just like Business 101 for scientists, written in a way and given in a way that scientists can understand it. And from there, you can pick different types of courses that you want to take. I took a course on like Management 101, just hiring practices and how to build a team and an org chart and that kind of thing. People that are going to be fundraising soon take a fundraising course. They have access to networks, so they know other scientists, entrepreneurs that have done it and built a company and exited a company that can give you, help specific to what you're doing. They have folks working to Activate that go up to Washington, D.C. and lobby and make sure they're able to have enough money to support their program. And kind of getting back to more of the practical terms of support that Activate offers, they offer salary support for a founder in the company for 2 years, which is really great because now you don't have to raise money to put into one of your founder's salaries. So that makes, you know, your burn a lot less, so you can put that towards product development. They also provide an R&D fund. They provide travel funding. So going to like an LSI or any of these conferences can be really expensive. So Activate can help support with that. We're super excited because Activate has had, they've had cohorts in Boston, New York, Berkeley, and then an Anywhere program in past years. And this year, 2024, is the first cohort they opened in Houston. And Baritone was one of the inaugural companies in this inaugural Houston cohort, the only life science company in this cohort in Houston 2024. Super excited, super honored to be a part of it because there's a lot of really cool stuff going on in Houston, as you know. So we're just super honored to be a part of it.
Yeah, I think what was so interesting to me covering Activate opening in Houston too was just this, like you said, the idea of really providing the resources to these like deep tech and, you know, heavy infrastructure types of companies that the valley of death is there and looming when you take something very scientific and try to commercialize it. So just helping bridge that gap between kind of the early days of research into building an actual company. So it's very cool to see that you kind of like made the most of the biodesign program and now Activate. So when you think of to date, everything you've accomplished with Baritone, what are you thinking for the future? And like, we can start with 2025 because that's tomorrow for us. So what are you looking forward to accomplishing in 2025 and then kind of take us through the bigger picture for the company too?
Sure. So 2025 is going to be a big year for Baritone, especially around solidifying our regulatory plan. So our device that we're making is really low risk. We're not putting any energy into the body, providing this really excellent signal, and we're potentially replacing or augmenting a surgical procedure. So right now, if you want to see where the airway is collapsing in a person, you have to sedate them and run a scope. So we're making basically taking an operating procedure out of that environment into the home environment, which would be much better for patients. So we've always hypothesized that we'll have a 510K clearance with FDA. But what we're actually moving towards is having our first meeting with FDA to kind of solidify those plans. We talked to investors. Some of them are really curious to know, well, you've told me all this stuff, but what does FDA think about this? So we actually put together our pre-submission document. We actually submitted it last Friday. That is going to go into the FDA. We'll schedule a meeting with them and kind of just tell them, hey, this is what we're working on. Here's what our preliminary data looks like. It already looks really good. We already have a really good match rate to the current standard of care. And these are the clinical, these are the indications that we want to have around this device. Does this sound good? Yes, no. I'm just kind of had our first interaction with FDA. It will be a big milestone for us. And we'll get that done within the next 6 weeks or so. We are going to be raising a seed round this year. So we'd like to raise $2 million. That would be in support of kind of our electrical safety testing we need to do with FDA. That would be in support of a technical hire, and that would be in support of launching an initial pilot. So coming out of 2025, we're going to be, you know, going into 2026, we'll be looking at an FDA cleared product, doing some pilot launches. So for us, 2025 is all about enabling that, collecting lots of good clinical data, working at Houston Methodist with a great partner there, getting our first interactions with FDA underway, getting our electric safety testing going and raising money so that we can have this device available for people to use by 2026.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I'm glad we're talking now, right ahead of your very busy year of making those big accomplishments.
Oh yeah, I've been freshening up the deck and sending out notes to investors to let them know we're going to have some really exciting milestones coming up in this quarter, this Q1 of 2025.
So one thing that I think is really interesting, and you just mentioned, you're basically making everything with this device. You're making everything a little bit easier on both the practitioner side and the patient side. And you've also made a device that can be an at-home device, which I feel like is a very interesting industry. I wonder, you know, in your career, have you observed an evolution within home health and the kind of types of technology emerging to really put the power back in the patient's hands and kind of make things a little bit easier to get diagnostics, et cetera?
Yeah, I certainly during the pandemic, with this kind of switch to work from home and, you know, telemedicine and all these things from home, we've had lots of tools for doing healthcare at home, but just not really I guess the emergent need in the way that we had during the COVID-19 pandemic, where you can't go into your doctor's office, you need to do your testing at home. So I think that really sped things up. I think it kind of it drove home the need, I guess, in insurers' eyes, in hospitals' eyes, patients. I think patients always want to do what's going to be easy and convenient for them. So there've always been an interest there, but kind of developing the pathway where it's able to be done, I think, has been, the COVID-19 pandemic definitely helped. Now there's a lot of coding around doing healthcare from home and doing diagnostics from home that insurers and doctors are taking advantage of. You kind of see this movement also with consumer products. So a lot of, we often get confused for kind of what an Apple Watch or what Oura Rings can do, which is you can wear them overnight. They'll give you some kind of sleep metric. Maybe they can give you like an indicator that you might have sleep apnea and you need to go into the doctor. What we're doing is more in depth than that. It goes beyond kind of those things. But you kind of see this interest in people with these devices that they're wearing all the time, getting more out of them, getting more information about how their sleep is affecting maybe how their workout routine goes or how they feel at work the next day. So it's kind of all of this is, dovetailing, I think, towards establishing kind of this idea of healthcare that, diagnostics that you can do from home. There's and sleep medicine as well, kind of these virtual clinics where you can go online, order a home sleep test. They'll do the basic diagnostic that says you have sleep apnea. They can prescribe you a CPAP from there. They can prescribe you a dental device from there. They can put you into contact with a doctor, all without you leaving your computer desk. And there's this kind of movement towards that in the areas of medicine where they're able to do so. So I think that kind of movement is here to stay. It's easier for patients. Doctors can still oversee the healthcare. In many cases, they can see and interact with more patients virtually than they would be able to in their offices. You have savings for insurers and hospitals as well when that kind of healthcare is managed in the correct way.
I love that you mentioned the kind of the wave of like the Oura Ring and the Fitbit, because I literally cannot live without my Fitbit. I need to know how well I slept from a data perspective, not just how I feel. I feel validated by my sleep data on my Fitbit. So I'm definitely
Yeah,
a member of that movement for sure.
for sure. I mean, I have a Polar device that I use to track heart rate for my workouts. But before my work, I before I did this, my workouts were just the same. They felt great. But now I can like analyze and like look at charts and graphs, see where my heart rate was. And, like this kind of workout led to this outcome. I like as a data-driven person is really interesting. I think lots of people are in this kind of data-driven mode, especially with easy access to data that you can look at in an app that's easy to understand. And we're building that for our device. We're building like this kind of intricate readout for doctors to see where collapses are happening in the airway. And we're also building something that's patient-facing, where they can say, well, hey, I slept on my back and I had this many collapses. Maybe there are things I can do at home that will, prevent me from having apnea events. So there's a lot of kind of this patient-friendly, patient-facing stuff that we think about when we're building our products as well.
Yeah, I think it's like the perfect combination of those things, of like the diagnostics and the trend and like more people being comfortable with their home health care. And then also this trend of having all the data points of our own bodies at
Yeah.
the fingertips or on our wrist. So
Yeah. Having and control as well. I mean, I keep mentioning the pandemic, but I mean, this is a major event, right? I mean, the idea of I can go buy my diagnostic from CVS, I can run my own test strip and see if I have COVID, and then kind of make decisions from there. You just didn't really have that before. This is kind of a brand new world when it comes to that kind of thing. The idea of buying a diagnostic, using it, having this insight, and then deciding what further medical intervention you might need from there.
one thing I love talking to entrepreneurs about is the look back question. And obviously, there's a lot ahead of you still developing Baritone. But if you could go back to like the early days when you were still, maybe you've decided within the biodesign program what you were going to focus on, the early days of Baritone, what do you wish you'd known back then?
That one's tough. I wish so. Scientist by training, PhD. I've worked in the tech transfer field for many years. I've kind of seen other sign as entrepreneurs when they build their companies. And I see their successes and I see some of the things that might be mistakes that they're doing. I'm like, oh, well, I'll never do that. But when I started doing baritone, I would still be making kind of like these mistakes, even around, how I present the story to investors. So one of kind of the communication things we had, because again, we're building this device that goes beyond a basic sleep test, but I need to get that message out quickly and succinctly, or else they're just going to think it's an Oura ring and why should they even bother? So that was something that took a lot of trial and error. But once kind of got to that, the pitch, like we're going beyond that, we're showing you the site of collapse so you can pick the best treatment. That took us a couple months of just pitching the thing and getting feedback to get. So probably my advice to Megan a couple years ago would be to just workshop that pitch a whole lot more and try to get to that easy story as soon as possible. People don't really want like a 5-minute problem statement. They want to understand the problem in a couple sentences so they can understand, instant reaction if they think it's cool, if they think it's relevant, if they think it's interesting. So I think that would have been helpful for us, is kind of making the story shorter and snappier, which I'm still kind of iterating every time that we pitch and every time we go out to raise money.
Yeah, I think it actually comes up a lot when I, especially on this podcast, of the storytelling element and how critical that is for startups. So it's such a great reminder, and I'm sure a reminder and maybe like PTSD for entrepreneurs and founders listening to be like, oh yes, it's always the hardest part. Or it's one of the hardest parts of starting a company, is getting that story succinct, and also, you know, what you need it to be. So just to wrap up, you know, I know Baritone is founded in Houston. Your career is here. How important has Houston been in the like overall story for Baritone's success and for its future?
You know, I really love Houston. Like I said, I'm from Louisiana. I came here, made my life here, you know, found my spouse here, and, you know, forming a family here. I really love Houston, especially for MedTech. The medical center is just awesome. You have all these really brilliant people coming in from all over the world to work with these institutions. They are training undergrads, they're training grad students, they're training physicians all the time. They're bringing in their knowledge from wherever they came from and kind of enhancing it here and developing these really great skill sets. So, you know, when I went into graduate school, I knew nothing about intellectual property. And now, you know, I've worked in tech transfer for 5 years and I could like point out, you know, 20 or so other people that are in Houston that are experts on intellectual property and commercialization. And it's kind of because of this, this atmosphere of kind of excellence around healthcare, innovation and open-mindedness and collaboration. So I think those are reasons why I really love working in Houston. And kind of just from like a story standpoint from Baritone, you know, we came out of the BioZyme program, three founders that didn't know each other before we got together in the BioZyme program. Now, you know, working in this company for 3 years, raised a lot of money, got, you know, working prototype and looking forward to, you know, a really exciting future, because the folks at Sectus Medical Center wanted to do a BioZyme program and they wanted to kind of help innovation grow out of this really great, the soil, if you will, where you have all these physicians and scientists and trainees all working together in this really great environment, you know, looking at this environment and thinking, well, why don't we have more startup companies in biotech emerging out of here? What can we do to help that grow? And I think among kind of the community of founders, you know, when I was at the Innovation Map Awards, when I was at Jingle Mingle, which is an event put on by Value City Startups, you see the community there. You know, they've worked on one company, maybe they exited, maybe that company failed, they're on to the next thing. But you're all sharing and helping and being really collaborative. So I really love that part of the community here in Houston around startups.
Yeah, absolutely. It takes a village, as I feel like you've talked a little bit about. And now, you know, like Houston has more and more resources for founders. So I'm glad that you've had a good experience growing in Houston. I know health tech, so much opportunities here. So thank you so much for joining me today and talking about how much you have going on in this new year. Good luck with all of that. It'll be a busy one, sounds like.
Yes, busy but exciting. Always exciting to hit milestone. You know, when I kind of look back at the story and kind of prototypes we had in the past, and now we have this really cool video of how the prototype works that gets people really excited. Then you kind of update investors that you've been talking to, and they're really excited about it. So you're just really excited to see where we can take it in the future. We'll also be launching our updated website. We have some really cool stuff on there as well in the next couple of weeks. So look out for that in early January as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again for joining me. It was lovely getting to talk to you and learn more about Baritone. So thank you.
Thanks so much for the opportunity and Happy New Year.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.